T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Well, let's get to our guest, please. Former Senator Jim Talent joining me today, as usual, on this Thursday morning. Jim, good to have you on.
It is good to be with you, as usual.
Absolutely. We've been debating facial hair and coronavirus and all kinds of things. Did you watch or hear any of the president's news conference yesterday?
Yeah, I was able to watch some of it. I had to go out to a dinner. I've read a lot about it afterwards. I liked what he had to say, and I like Pence being in charge of it. I think Pence is a very able guy, but I also think it sends the right signal. And I think that, you know, the plan is very clear what they're doing. They're aggressively using public health measures, that's quarantines and other kinds of similar measures, to slow down the disease at minimum. I mean, if we can keep it out, that's great, but at least slow it down. And then they're doing a 4-point plan, basically to prepare for it while, you know, they're using the extra time to get ready if and when it does come. And from what I'm reading, they're hitting all the right points. They're stocking up on protective gear for healthcare workers. They're exploring therapeutics very aggressively. That's, you know, that's medical countermeasures, things to reduce the virulence of the disease. Trying to get a vaccine as quickly as possible and looking at the point of care diagnostics. So these are all things they should be doing. They're certainly going to be spending enough money, $2.5 billion. And that's the first tranche, buys a lot. So I like what they're doing. And I think the president's message was, look, we're just going to keep calm and carry on. And as the Brits say, that's the right message.
It's important, particularly given what happened in the stock market the last couple of days, which I believe was a complete overreaction. Not that there shouldn't have been a bump, because clearly it's impacting exports and imports and all of that. I understand that there has to be some impact on it. What bothers me the most is when I hear people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, who never waste any time in trying to weaponize something against this president. The politics of it just stink. I mean, be honest with me. What difference does it make if the president asked for $2.5 billion or $8 billion? Chuck Schumer seemed to suggest he's doing something wrong by not asking for $8 billion to fight this.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's very irresponsible, and I think it's a mistake on their part. I mean, for one thing, I would really get informed on this issue. This is not an issue, because it's one obviously the public cares about and should care about, where you can go and read the message points, you know, from the half-page memo you got from the staff, and yeah, this is going to work. I mean, it's, you know, it's not going to work, and it would not be the right thing for the administration to go down and say to Congress, just pass a blank check and give us $50 billion, and we'll figure out how to spend it. For one thing, Congress needs to be a partner in this, which means that you need to tell them what you need the money for, why you think it's going to cost that much, other things that you're considering, and actually put an amount on it. And if they need more money, they'll get more money. If they want to participate constructively, that's welcome. But no, this is not the right way of dealing with this. This is a major problem, and we all need to react in a measured way.
Yeah, I would agree completely. Hey, let's talk about the debate and what's going on in South Carolina. Let me play a bite here. Go to cut number two, please.
This day, 30 years ago, Nelson Mandela walked out of prison and entered into discussions about apartheid. I had the great honor of meeting him. I had the great honor of being arrested with our UN ambassador on the streets of Soweto trying to get to see him on Robben's Island.
So apparently even Snopes is, which does not have any sort of conservative bias, is calling out Biden for making up stories again. Yet he's still the front runner in South Carolina. What are you expecting out of this vote on Saturday, Jim?
I think Biden is going to win. I think the question is where the expectation bar is set. and how much he wins by. I think he's going to hang in there. We're going to see three or four people. You know, as Klobuchar said the other day, why should I get out? I mean, even if you're losing, why get out? I mean, you're getting a national platform and you have a base of support. I think I said this on the show a couple of months ago. The trend now is for people to stay in even when the, you know, the outcome becomes more and more clear because it advances their political interest to stay in. So I think you're going to see three or four people continue to stay, including Biden. And Bloomberg has the money to stay. So, you know, he's going to be in it unless it's just a disaster for him in Super Tuesday.
What do you think it means for the future of the Democratic Party? I mean, you know, a lot of people who are Democrats who are pretty middle of the road, common sense. I know some of these folks. I have them here in the studio. I've had people in the studio recently who are not moderate, middle of the road Democrats. They're progressive leftists, but they're concerned about a Sanders nomination. They're deeply concerned about what it's going to mean for further down the ticket, and a lot of them are having second thoughts on whether or not this is good for their party.
Yeah, you think? One thing that I can say about Bernie is it's just 80 years of experience have gone through him without stopping.
Yeah.
Okay, so he has not learned his version of socialism. He likes to talk about the Baltic countries, and fair enough, you know. But they're not socialists in the sense that Bernie is talking about. They have higher taxes there, and they have a bigger social safety net. They also have a very vibrant free market, which is a result of very deliberate policies by their left of center parties. In other words, they understand you have to produce the wealth if you want to redistribute it, and you have to redistribute it in a way that actually achieves the goals you want, which means you don't reach back, you know, to 1932 in order to, you know, to develop your policies. And I think there's a lot of people across the spectrum who are going to be very concerned about that. So, I think it's a problem. I agree with. Now, I understand why Pelosi said what she said, because and that was a good poll responding. She has to protect her people running for reelection in the House. And it's a very difficult problem because, yeah, you can attack your party's front runner, but that doesn't help the people down ticket. All that does is demoralize the supporters of that person in your own party. So it's a real problem for her and for others like her. And we'll see what they do.
Well, you know, I'll give credit where credit is due. Glenn Beck, the national talk show host, is the one who brought this up. But he did some research on Sanders, and one of his senior advisors is a guy named David Serrata, who's been a journalist and a known progressive journalist for many, many years. He wrote an article in 2013 titled "Hugo Chavez's Economic Miracle." The Venezuelan leader was often marginalized as a radical, but his brand of socialism achieved real economic gains. Here's a guy that 7 years ago was embracing Hugo Chavez and what he did to Venezuela. It's amazing.
You know, I expect we'll find quotes from Bernie on that. We're going to see that happen if he becomes a nominee. A lot of the people he has around him have been, you know, saying that, and I expect he has also been saying nice things about people who turned out to be authoritarian, you know, dictators, because when the facts threaten his preconceptions, he goes with his preconceptions and maintains them. And I just think it's going to be a real issue. I think it's a big problem. We don't know. I mean, it's a volatile and unpredictable situation because we don't have a stable equilibrium. I know I'm going to sound like a political science professor, which I'm the furthest thing from it. But I mean, we don't have a stable governing sort of equilibrium in the country, and haven't really since 1994. So it's the people are closely divided. And so it's hard to predict, but I'm not sure they'll be so closely divided if Bernie's the nominee.
No.
We'll see, though. I mean, it's, you know, strange things have happened.
Well, you know, you've got the possibility. It looks like a very real possibility that even if Sanders comes in a close second in South Carolina, he's going to his lead is going to be hard to beat very shortly thereafter. And, you know, Amy Klobuchar hanging around, why not? Because he's not going to name another white guy to be his vice president. Let's just be honest about it.
And I think Warren is playing to be number two on that ticket and doing a good job of it from that standpoint. You know, I'll introduce another thought here because we're getting to the stage where this is really important. And I remember this from the 2008-2012 cycles. This will rapidly get to a point where if you want to figure out who's really ahead and how far ahead they are, you have to know how the delegates are selected in each state, and it varies widely. You know, the caucus states, primary states, proportionate selection, congressional district selection, and then you have to go through it state by state and sort of and have a good educated guess about what each candidate is going to get if you're going to try and figure out whether somebody's going to have an absolute majority. And it's not – I mean, you really have to dive deep into this whole process. So there's probably only three or four people in each campaign who really have studied that stuff.
Yes.
And what happens at this point is, you know, they get on the line with their supporters and donors and go through the states and explain why they think their candidate's going to do well or not. I'm not saying they agree on everything, but it gets very, very complicated. And so we're probably after Super Tuesday going to enter a 2 or 3 month period, you know, where that is going to be the order of the day.
I'm sure. Jim Talat, our guest this morning. Jim, the FISA warrants are being debated again in Washington right now. They're coming up on an early March deadline, or these things are going to expire. I don't know about you. I mean, and I'm interested in your take on this. Obviously, I was a supporter of this when it first came along. I think there was a very good reason for it. I think that the Mueller report led us to a couple of big holes in the process that have given a lot of people reason for pause, that there aren't enough safeguards built in to protect innocent American citizens.
Yes, I am deeply concerned and I mourn over what's happened to the FISA process, because I come from the first principle I come from is that we have to have robust intelligence collection in order to deal with the terrorists, the subnational movements, you know, as well as the nation states. But we have to know who the bad guys are and where they are and what they're doing. OK, so my propensity is to support this authority. But, OK, the whole deal was premised on the idea that you would put safeguards within the executive branch and effective oversight within the Congress from the political branches, in addition to this court check, you know, the FISA court, so as to protect the constitutional rights of American citizens. And it's very clear that broke down. I mean, Carter Page as an individual has gotten lost in this, but I mean, his rights were just, they just trampled on him. You're not supposed to do that to American citizens. And he didn't do anything wrong. I mean, he worked with the FBI. he was an active informant or source for them for years. And so I think this, I'm sorry, I've got a little cold.
No, that's okay.
It's not the coronavirus.
I'll take your word for it, but you can just stay over there on the phone.
Anyway, right, I'm on the phone. But it's really, I mean, it's very bad. So they have to, I think, I hope they don't get rid of it. I guess that's how I would enter this debate, that I don't want to get rid of it. But if it might be the only way to send the right message to the intelligence community. Look, if you're going to do this sort of thing, we're not going to give you the. You're just going to have to figure out another way to get the intelligence without this, and maybe then they'll listen. And I'm not talking about, you know, the thousands of men and women who do this all the time. I'm talking about the higher levels.
Yes,
this is bad. I mean, it's and you know, I've said this a number of times. It was the thing about the Mueller thing that, in terms of the longer term, bothered me the most. It was just wrong what happened, and they have to clean up that act now. I'll be interested to see what Bill Barr has to say. I have a lot of confidence in him. But, yeah, this is something they need to look at very carefully, and I hope responsible people on both sides are going to take the lead.
It's a great point, Jim. And I always want to go back and remind people that the innocent people who were offended, him, maybe Carter Page, all these folks were ultimately not guilty of what they were looking at them for. But the danger of this is that there are people capable of unmasking the names of people who weren't the targets of these FISA warrants, including Susan Rice, who admitted doing it dozens of times.
Right. That's a major problem. See, one of the issues you get with this is it's only supposed to apply to foreign communications.
Right.
Well, what if, you know, somebody calls somebody in the United States or has a communication in the United States. So if you're going to find out about the foreigner, you got the American on the other end. And the way the deal was, okay, fine, but you can't get access. We're not going to reveal the identity of the American, and we're going to protect that person's privacy, right? You shouldn't have the government sorting through all your communications because somebody from a foreign country called you. You need more than that. Remember, we're not talking about a classic warrant where you get probable cause that this, that John Smith or Jane Doe has committed a crime. If you can get that, then you go to a federal judge and you get a warrant. And that's Fourth Amendment compliant. That's fine. We're
right.
talking about intelligence collection, a sort of a much more generalized approach where you're gathering a lot of information on a lot of people who you don't think necessarily have committed a crime, but you're trying to track down nefarious characters who want to engage in terrorism and that sort of thing. So under those circumstances, you have to protect the privacy of Americans because they have rights under the Constitution.
It's scary.
And that
stuff.
Broke down here.
It,
yeah.
It did.
I don't want people sorting through all my they'd be pretty bored if they did, but I really don't want doing it.
Well,
so, yeah. I mean, this is something where this is an opportunity for Jerry Nadler and the Judiciary Committee to do something good. So I hope Jerry really pays some attention to this.
Let's hope.
And in a good way.
Let's hope they do. And if you feel passionately about it, call your elected congressperson today or senator and tell them, because they're going to be voting to reauthorize this here shortly, it looks like. Jim, appreciate your time, buddy. Thank you.
Get more at 971talk.com.